All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Today's date is February 2nd, 2023. This is the Thursday afternoon session of the council. Good afternoon, Keelan. Please call the roll.
Good afternoon. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Gonzalez.
Here.
Mops.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. And now we'll hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. I'm sure we won't need this, but it's always good to have it on the public record.
Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding hybrid public meetings with in-person attendance, in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council, in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves decorum and order during city council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually.
All right, thank you very much. We have one item on the agenda today, resolution number 107, please.
Establish focus, transformation, alignment of services, and shared priorities for Portland City Government.
Colleagues, we're here this afternoon for one simple reason, and that simple reason is that the voters have spoken. This past November, they approved a ballot measure amending the city's charter and changing our form of government. We now have less than 2 years to shift how the city manages and oversees bureaus and improve service delivery to Portlanders. To start our transition, last month, I issued an executive order that assigned bureaus by 5 different service areas to individual commissioners. Administration and police, to which I assigned myself. Public safety, led by Commissioner Gonzalez. Community and economic development, led by Commissioner Rubio. Culture and livability, led by Commissioner Ryan. And public works, led by Commissioner Mapps. Over the course of these next 2 years, council will continue working with the bureaus to better integrate city services. The resolution before you today acts as a roadmap for the next 2 years. It identifies the transition process needed to comply with the ballot measure and formally directs the Chief Administrative Officer, Michael Jordan, to lead that transition. How our organization must realign itself to prepare for a city manager, and provide transparent direction for how we'll continue to address our shared council priorities during that transition period. Today, Chief Administrative Officer Michael Jordan will kick off the presentation by speaking to his work leading the implementation of charter reform, as well as organizational realignment. Then each commissioner, myself included, will take a few minutes to overview our own individual service area action plans. So with that, before we get into the commissioners, we'll turn it over to Michael Jordan. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, members of the council, for letting us come today. My job, and with me today, Haley Blunsley from your office, Mr. Mayor, who will, I think, drive the slideshow here. My responsibility today is to talk about the first two sections of the resolution, which have to do with the direct implementation of the ballot measure that was passed by voters last November. I think we need to be as soon as we can be to slide number 3. There we go. Perfect. This slide articulates some of the aspects of the ballot measure that really must be implemented by the city so that we can move to the new form of government in January of 2025. Those include multiple aspects like having a city administrator who all parts of city government will report to and he or she will be accountable for. We are required to form four districts where there will be three council members elected from each of those districts. We're changing the form of voting to ranked choice voting. And we also will need to establish code changes and work with our partner at Multnomah County to be able to implement that ranked choice voting. We kind of caught a break this election cycle in that Multnomah County will be transitioning to ranked choice voting also. So I want to make sure I mention that the issues around the mayor council form of government are multifaceted, but primarily we've got, since we are moving from a council of 5 members to a council of 12 members from districts, that presents a number of logistical challenges for the city. For one, the chamber that you're sitting in today is not set up for 12 council members. And so we're going to have a number of issues that we need to deal with from a logistical perspective over the next 2 years. Also, the description of the roles of council, the delineation of authorities between the council and the mayor, which are not necessarily articulated in our code today because commissioners play both administrative and legislative roles in our current form. So a number of different changes will have to be gone through, and I'll talk about the code changes in a moment. The council, in the form of the ordinance, directs the chief administrative officer to develop and implement a transition plan and a community engagement plan. That community engagement part is critical. There are a number of elements within the charter change which mandate certain parts of the changes to be engaged with the city on. A requirement for multiple public hearings in the formation of the districts. And also, not only is it required, but desired that we engage with the public in multiple parts of this change. And then further in 24, primarily 2024, we will need to do a significant amount of education out in the public because it will be a completely different ballot that they will see in November of 2024. There will be, as I mentioned before, but beyond just the definition of the city administrator, the mayor, and the council's roles, there will be a number of code changes that have to be accomplished. Those will begin with the code changes necessary in our elections code. The reason that those are front-loaded is that by about March, we are going to need to have those codes in place so that we can work with a vendor and the county to actually put the software in place to run the election in that different form. So you will begin to see code changes quite soon about the transition. Chief Administrative Officers, also beyond code and engagement, required to report back to you on a regular basis. We are also engaging with bureau directors at an executive leadership team that's been in place for a while, but they will play a very important role in this transition. We are forming a number of commissions. You already have appointed the districting commission. We have yet to appoint a salary commission, which in the new charter will be responsible for setting the salaries for all elected officials. That commission will be made up of HR professionals who live in the city of Portland but do not work for the city of Portland. The Venn diagram seems to be relatively small there. we're trying to make sure that you will have a slate of folks for that commission very shortly. And then also we are looking to bring you a slate of nominees for a government transition advisory committee. That group is really meant to represent the broad public in all aspects of the transition, and they will be our primary audience in working with them to engage with the public and make sure we're doing a good job at that. At the end, at the bottom of this slide, it's very important to note that while this resolution directs the Chief Administrative Officer to do multiple tasks in this transition, the responsibility for approving code changes, the responsibility for approving budgets, and I might add a budget in the 24, I'll say 20 whatever timeframe, because we may talk about multi-year budgeting in this process. The responsibility for that, adopting that budget, which will be handed off to the new council in January 25, is the responsibility of this council, and that the budgeting into that new council and mayor will also include, as I'm going to talk about on the next page, to some degree, a change in organizational structure. So next slide, please. So the part of what I just talked about are all really mandates by the charter language that was adopted. What's on this slide and what I'm going to talk about now is not mandated by the charter amendment. However, when you really think through the transition to a different form of government and at some point an appointed city administrator accountable for the operation of city government, it really does beget a serious discussion about the formation and organizational structure of city government and how we deliver services to the public. And so the resolution also directs the Chief Administrative Officer to develop a methodology by which we can do that analysis of city government and to guide that discussion. That discussion is going to have multiple components. The mayor mentioned the assignment of bureaus into service areas. That really was the kickoff of this conversation. It changes the way the relationship between the commissioners in charge and the service delivery that's happening from the city, and puts it into groupings that we think are aligned at the beginning. But I'll say beginning again, because those assignments really were the beginning of the conversation. Where that conversation leads is really up to you all and the leadership of bureaus and the people who are accountable for delivering those services. And what we're hoping to do with that common methodology is help guide all of the leadership of the city through a conversation that will ultimately lead to recommendations about organizational structural changes. And we hope to have those done by about the end of October this year.
Michael, if yes, I could sir. Just add,
yes,
and you're doing a great job, and I hate to interrupt, but I also just for the record want to state that the assignment of bureaus into service areas was an iterative process mm-hmm. with all five of us up here at the council level.
This
did not just come from me or from my staff. We met with the commissioners. There were a number of changes made to reflect both other people's thoughts in terms of how to cluster those bureaus, as well as how to assign them. So I just want to be really clear about that on the record.
Great point, Mr. Mayor. I believe that process took about a month or month and a half of interaction with your colleagues to actually get to that point. So we are, and your comment is important in that I don't think it's wrong to say that this is a very challenging position for you all. You not only have to operate this city in a structure that it's been in for more than 100 years, but you also have to envision a new structure and a new way to govern, and you have to do that simultaneously. Not an easy task for anybody. And so I really appreciate the notion that this is a collaborative discussion among you all to move us to this new place. So I really appreciate that. And go back where I was, we need to do that by about the end of October this year, or in the fall at least. And the reason for that is that we have to budget into that new structure for the 24 whatever budget cycle. That is going to involve us thinking about the whole way we budget today And how would we budget when we have a city administrator who is also the budget officer for the city? And how can we envision a process that is a more holistic process with a council that must deliberate on that budget? So a lot of things to think about. We are going to assist you all in having those conversations. We want to use the leadership team of the bureau directors and council in the form of work sessions periodically through that process to be able to make sure we're level setting those five conversations. So we're going roughly in the same direction, understanding that the content will be very different. But also, I think everyone realizes that there will be inter-service area conversations that have to go on also. Some programmatic areas that have historically been put in a certain bureau may not belong within that service area as we think about the future. So there will not only be conversations within service areas, but between service areas. And at least my experience is that as you do this, things fall between the cracks. And so some group has to take that more enterprise view of the entire situation and figure out where those things belong that might fall between the cracks or be multiple service area conversations. And I mentioned the budget rebuild. We really appreciate that Tim Grew is back on with the city and brings a level of experience and expertise to help us think about how that future budget might be. Also, back under the rubric of engagement with the public, it's my hope that as we bring on some capacity to be able to do some particular public engagement, that we go out and talk to the public a little bit about what their expectations of city government are these days at a fairly high level and in an outcome kind of way within these service categories so that we have a bit of a North Star to navigate by. It's at least been my experience in these kinds of restructurings that there are tons of 5149 decisions, and having the public weigh in a bit on a North Star that their expectations are that we deliver whatever it is in these service areas will help us make those challenging decisions about moving, restructuring, aligning different programs. So we're hopeful for that. The last thing I'll mention on kind of the move, two last things. One, I know most of us think about this in terms of an org chart, lines and boxes on charts. There really is a subterranean level to restructuring a city government that is embedded in technical platforms. So SAP, your accounting platforms, your HR platform, they all have to be aligned to these changes if you're actually going to be executing them when you kind of pull the trigger on the changes. So there'll be a group that is currently forming to look at all those technical changes. And I will maybe go out on a limb to say that those technical limitations, let's say, will be the thing that constricts the scope of this discussion in the short term. In the long term, you can do almost anything you want. But we don't have a long term. We really have one budget cycle to do this and then one budget cycle to implement. And so those technical folks will give us some sideboards about, yeah, you can do that, but if you go beyond that, we're going to be a little bit in trouble when we begin to implement. So think about those things. And then the last thing, it does go back to implementation. While I'm hopeful we can have a plan for the architecture by fall, I'm hopeful we will have a budget process to go through for the fall and spring. We will start almost immediately after that architecture is completed to begin the process of change management, begin to work with our work groups and our bureaus and our and all of the managers and line staff that will be affected by these changes so that when we get to July 1 of 24 and begin to implement, they'll be more ready to do that. And it won't be, change is tough, change is traumatic. We want our folks to be in as comfortable a position that they've been informed, they're ready to make those changes. The last thing I'll mention on this for the third time is that We all realize that this will be a challenging budget year this year for us. We realize also, I think, that the next year will be a challenging budget year. Not only do I think we want to hand the organizational keys to a new council and a new mayor and ultimately a new city administrator where it can run pretty well at the beginning, we also have to be very cognizant of handing over to that same group a fiscally sustainable city that where they come on board in January of 25 and they're not in a fiscal hole right off the bat. They're going to have a tough enough time figuring out how to make it work right off the bat with a bunch of new players. So we're going to do the best we can over the next 2 years to make this organizationally as strong as we can make it and make it fiscally as sustainable as we can make it. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Colleagues, any questions?
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, so with that, we'll jump into the...
Do you want me to stay? Sorry, I always forget to turn my mic on. We'll jump into the individual commissioner commentaries. I'll go ahead and start. As Michael leads those elements of the transition that he described, the council obviously has to work collaboratively to ensure the success of this change while continuing to address our shared priorities that we've already stated as a council. And those are homelessness, public safety, livability, as well as economic recovery through the lenses of good government, equity, and sustainability. In front of us today is a 90-day action plan for each of the service areas that Michael described. Each commissioner was given the opportunity to develop their own plans in collaboration with other council offices. I want to thank each of my colleagues for taking the time over the past few weeks to work with your bureaus and other stakeholders to put this together. It looks good now, but I assure you it was a challenging process getting up to this point. And I really want to thank my colleagues for being able to pivot very quickly as our thoughts on this evolved and the directions that we wanted to give to the Chief Administrative Officer and our bureaus shifted from time to time, but I think ultimately what we ended up with here is really fantastic work, and I just want to thank each of you for literally the weeks of work that you and your staffs put into this. Some of the ideas did come from the mayor's office. Some of the ideas came from other commissioners' offices, but ultimately it was up to the commissioner in charge to develop and submit their own 90-day plan. The resolution in front of us today honors each of your leadership as well as your input. And frankly, I think it's a lot smarter and better than where we started because of it. Before we dive into each service area, the resolution directs council as a whole to advocate for the city's priorities in the ongoing legislative session, as well as using our upcoming budget conversations to identify and advance potential realignments. That will obviously be done in conjunction with our Bureau leadership team, as well as the Chief Administrative Officer. All of you will also, of course, be involved in that process. We're gonna dig into the action plan, starting with my service area, which we've identified as administration and police. Some, by the way, may ask, why is the mayor retaining the police bureau when the other first responder and public safety bureaus are going to a different commissioner? I just want to highlight that the charter reform, which was passed by the voters, mandates that the police bureau remain with the mayor. So we are honoring that process and continuing with that structure. I just want to highlight a few of the key items. Over the next 90 days, I'll continue to implement resolutions 37595 as well as 37596, which the council passed last November to address Portland's rampant rates of homelessness. My team is in the process of identifying temporary alternative shelter sites and service hubs, and working with contractors and service providers to ensure that we're ready to begin building the sites as quickly as they are secured legally. These sites are going to play a critical role in connecting homeless Portlanders with the services they identified as desperately needing in order to be able to get off and stay off the streets. As we continue to hire more officers into the Portland Police Bureau, my office will work to develop and adopt a long-term gun violence reduction strategy. That strategy will expand upon place-based violence interventions and street-level outreach through programs like our Safer Summer PDX initiative. Quickly, I want to highlight one last element of this action plan, that is citywide activations. My team's going to complete the citywide lighting program and increase contracted graffiti abatement to improve livability across the city, drawing more foot traffic to our downtown area, to our local business districts, and breathing new life into our public spaces. Those are just the few that I want to highlight today. From there, I'll pass it over to Commissioner Gonzalez.
Thanks so much, Mayor. We'll jump to our slides real quick here. And as a general overview, my bureaus are focused on your first responders outside of police, as well as those that plan for and manage crisis. So high level, the people on the ground that are dealing with the tough issues in the city, but also those that have to plan and think about it long term. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide. I'm just going to highlight a couple of areas of focus specific to these bureaus. One, with emergency communication, we're very, very focused on a single metric. It's a very complicated output from a lot of a number of inputs, but it's essentially 911 response time. And what we have to do to get those numbers down is a staffing issue. It's a technological issue. Our most basic call out here for this bureau over the next 90 days is that we stabilize and we don't see those numbers go up. And that's your 911 response time. And again, this is a complex topic. It's got a lot of inputs into it, but that's keeping the lights on, keeping our responses timely. With respect to fire, we've got a number of pieces going on there at a staffing level. These have been your first responders as we've dealt with a number of the issues associated with homeless. In particular, we're focused on overtime spend. It's looking at it like a $25 million spend this year in Fire Bureau alone. So a big focus of the next 90 days is identifying staffing, a staffing plan that will alleviate this type of spend. There's a specific piece in there for rapid response vehicles, our RRIVs. Through a budget note, they're being cut for, or have submitted a proposed budget that would cut those dollars, and we're looking at ways to stabilize that. We think it's an important part of the funding equation. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. Besides our bureaus, we've been very focused on and honoring in terms of the key issues in the city in our 90 days. So that's homelessness and crime. At a high level, we've asked every one of the bureaus I manage to assess existing policies and procedures with this following specific question in mind. We are moving from unsanctioned to sanctioned camping. What existing policies and procedures need to change to support that transition? And I'll give you a very specific example inside of fire. We have existing policies specific within Portland Street Response on the distribution of tents. We also have existing protocols on enforcing things like gas tanks and in homeless camps. And propane tank specifically. So we're asking fire to come back with some specific recommendations. If we're moving from sanctioned to unsanctioned, from unsanctioned to sanctioned, what do we need to do to support that? And we'll have a report as early as February 15, specifically on tent distribution policy in Portland Street Response. You can go ahead and go on to the next one. The other big one that we've been very focused on, and we're going to kind of just go through these slides free form here, but to reevaluate historic delegation to the county of our municipal court. So under home rule principles and historically, the city was largely responsible for the prosecution of low-level crimes, misdemeanors. Some 50 years ago, the city made the choice to outsource that to the county and to the district attorney. We'd like the next 90 days to reevaluate some of the underpinnings in that decision, and specifically to address something we're all feeling and seeing on our streets today. High level, we're prosecuting a fraction of the misdemeanors we used to in Multnomah County. That goes back more than a decade. That predates any elected official up here. There's been a long-term trend in not prosecuting vehicular thefts, vandalism and other thefts to the way we used to. And that impacts our most marginalized communities to the greatest extent. If you're in a working class neighborhood and your vehicle's catalytic converter stolen, that's the vehicle you use to go to work. It's not just an inconvenience, it can be life altering, much less your small business being vandalized. The other big piece I'd like to call out here is historically intervention on low level crimes has been a key to diversion, has been a key trigger to mandate or to compel folks to engage in addiction services. So you remove the stick, essentially the judicial system, for a lot of the low level crimes. It's interfering with our ability to drive diversion in the region. So we think that's a gap. Municipal courts, just one avenue to tackle this. We're going to evaluate it in the next 90 days, but also really want to look with some of our government partners on other ways to skin this cat. With that, I'll leave it and turn over to my colleague.
Very good. Commissioner Rubio.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. Portland is embarking on one of the biggest transformations in our history, and it requires that each of us do our part, leading on structural changes and policy lifts that need increased focus right now, especially as we move into January of 2025 soon. While we all have our different pieces of the work ahead, they all need to work in concert with one another, and it's going to take a level of collaboration and communication under unprecedented circumstances that I would argue no other city council has confronted before. And it starts today with this resolution. As leaders, we work hard to set priorities and to stay focused. And I'm proud that we came together as a city council over the last 30 days to better define this work, to reestablish our roles and present a roadmap for the next 2 years. And we're taking action because we know we need to move quickly, thoughtfully, and strategically to deliver to Portlanders come January 2025 with the new form of government, a better organizational structure of city services, and progress on our most pressing priorities. And I also want you to know that the work outlined under my section of the resolution is in addition to the critically important climate work that will continue and that we'll oversee in our Sustainability Bureau. In the coming months, you'll learn about the millions of dollars we'll be investing in Portland's tree canopy, energy efficiency projects for affordable housing and to reduce carbon emissions, and the city's first climate investment plan. And that plan represents my continued work to better align our most impactful climate policy actions with our available financial resources. And finally, before I give a brief list of the work within the Community and Economic Development service area, I want to acknowledge the Bureau directors and staff that have worked hard to build our priority policy lifts. So thank you to Rebecca Esau, Molly Rogers, Kimberly Branham, Donnie Oliveira, and also Terry Tyson, Kurt Kruger, and the entire permit improvement team in OMF, as well as the permit improvement task force. All of these people helped to shape what we're about to hear today. So over the next 90 days within the Community and Economic Development Service Area, we will be making progress on the following. To increase housing production, we will identify publicly owned sites as the first step toward building a land bank that can be further assessed for affordable housing development opportunities. We'll also assess the impact of city policies and regulations that drive the cost of building housing in Portland. And we will explore the possibility of converting office space to residential space and defining how that could work financially. And then finally, we'll review and reach out to multi-dwelling housing projects that are in approved status, but are just one step away from receiving a permit. And to improve city permitting, we will launch a multifamily housing pilot project to identify projects that are still in review status and what is needed to move them forward. We'll also support the newly formed Public Works pilot project in the development of a plan to resolve conflicts among the four infrastructure bureaus. And we will direct the regulatory work group to deliver a recommendation to council on how to better coordinate code development work across the city to avoid conflicts in the first place. We'll also explore changing when the system development charges are paid, the reduction of early assistance fees, and in particular, ways to better assist small businesses and needed tenant improvements. Next, to advance key workforce and economic development efforts, We will design a non-standard employment program specifically for houseless community members that provides opportunities for work. We'll finalize and adopt the city's inclusive economic development strategy. And then finally, we'll continue the work with Portland's industrial sector to establish an industrial symbiosis practice, initiate a planning process that aims to set carbon reduction goals in line with the city's climate goals, and grow this sector of our local economy. So what I've just presented is a high-level summary. There's much more detail on each of these items. So I invite folks to read the resolution and Exhibit A, which includes more detail on these items. So you'll not only find more information, but you'll see that many of the policy lifts are in partnership with the mayor's office and also carry work forward that involves my other council colleagues' offices as well. So we look forward to accelerating progress on these priorities and delivering on the improvements that Portland needs and working with my colleagues in service to the city we love.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Commissioner Ryan, you're next.
Thank you, Mayor. Today's city council meeting is historic. We have an opportunity to advance systemic change from the old form of commission government. During my tenure over the last 3 years, I made it clear the biggest challenge to move work is how the city is organized into silos. I believe for Portland to be the city that works, we need to organize differently, think differently, and act differently. Restructuring our city into 5 work areas is a first right step. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, and all of my colleagues on the City Council for engaging in this collaborative process. Over the past 2 months, I've enjoyed the conversations immensely. Now the hard work begins. Portlanders voted for change, expect action. So let's hand over the keys to the new form of government in 2025 with momentum and focus. We need direction, not perfection. Buckle up, here we go. Before I dive into the new work area, I want to share a reflection of what has been accomplished as I remain committed to seeing through system changes in permitting and on-ramps to chronic homelessness disability. First, Portland's permitting system has been broken for decades. That's why I formed the Permit Improvement Task Force, co-chaired by Commissioner Mapps. We have built accountability, community accountability with transparent data sets and customer service surveys. The silos within the city are coming down and we finally have more efficiently serving our customers. Our handoff to Commissioner Rubio has been smooth as we now have a transition team moving the work. The momentum is exciting. I'm proud the work is being led by Permit Improvement Manager Terry Tyson. I'm also committed to seeing the Safest Village project to its completion as a vital on-ramp for homelessness to stable housing. In addition to continuing to meet the needs of chronically homeless Portlanders at the 4 open and active sites, BIPOC Village, Menlo Park Safest Village, Multnomah Safest Village, and the Queer Affinity Village, the Safest Village team will continue to build the remaining sites. One site has been ready since the end of 2022, Sunderland RV Safe Park. The site is waiting for the county to assign a shelter provider. We will also soon break ground on Peninsula Crossing and Reedway Safest Villages, which are in the final stages of permitting. I'm very proud of this program and the work by Houseless Strategies Manager Charity Montez. Now on to the new assignments. Portlanders love their parks and their natural areas. Multiple bureaus are responsible for providing integrated public services to the community, including protection and management of natural resources, building green infrastructure, expanding urban tree canopy, and urban watershed protection. We all want the city's bureaus to use public resources in the most efficient and effective ways possible to improve livability and make system improvements that Portlanders see and feel. In 2019, former City Commissioner Nick Fish directed the bureaus to cooperatively develop recommendations to improve natural resource delivery and clarify roles and responsibilities, and the bureaus have made significant progress. This was his legacy, and since then, the bureaus have collaborated with each other and with community stakeholders to develop more effective natural resource and urban forestry management in Portland. I'm excited my office will see Nick Fish's vision come to fruition. In partnership with Commissioner Mapps, the Bureau of Environmental Services, Portland Parks and Recreation, Portland Water Bureau, and Portland Bureau of Transportation. A work plan will be developed by fall of 2023. The Office of Equity and Human Rights was born out of a vision to lead intentional efforts to advance equity in city services and supports, and a strategic plan was created to advance that mission. I directed the Office of Equity and Human Rights to conduct an assessment of the implementation and outcomes of its strategic plan. I asked Director Watson to report back on how the city can strengthen its strategic plan as it relates to equity and determine steps forward to align goals and metrics throughout the city bureaus. The Office of Community and Civic Life's mission is to connect people of Portland with the city government to promote common good, with the goal to create a culture of collaboration, expanding possibilities for Portlanders to contribute their knowledge, experience, and creativity to address local concerns. We need to make sure the Office of Civic Life is delivering on that mission. First, I directed the Bureau to transfer the licensing and regulatory portions of the organization to the Bureau of Development Services and Prosper Portland. These are cannabis, liquor, and noise programs. Second, we can all agree the city needs a reset of the relationship it has with our 94 neighborhood associations and with the neighborhood nonprofits. Our neighborhoods are the center of economic development, community safety, and livability, and we need healthy, vibrant neighborhoods for a stronger Portland. There was a time in the not so distant past in which our neighborhood associations were the envy of cities internationally. Let's press a reset and revive that asset. We also need to ensure, as we reset, equity must be at the core. I directed the Office of Civic Life and the Office of Equity and Human Rights to evaluate the city's neighborhood associations through an equity lens and produce a report identifying high impact and strategic opportunities for collaboration between the city and Portland's neighborhoods. Although it's not a city bureau, the arts is an active assignment that needs focus. As a city arts liaison, my office will lead a process in partnership with the mayor's office and the city's arts program to evaluate the city's current arts-related services, examining the impact, performance, and opportunities for improvement. We must reinvigorate one of the primary economic drivers of our city, the arts. The evaluation will strengthen the future of arts in Portland. In addition, I will also direct the city arts program to convene an internal cross-bureau arts table to advise on transition and reorganization efforts related to the city's arts model. Finally, we will explore how government can rethink the lack of investment being felt by the five big arts organizations in our city. And I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the Portland Children's Levy. I think we all know children are the greatest assets for any city. The levy is symbolic of how we care for our children and youth. The investments from Portland Children's Levy since 2002 have vastly improved life for many children, youth, and with focused data-driven grants. Renewal of this investment for our children and youth is crucial. Providing excellence in parks, arts, neighborhoods, equity, children, youth is foundational to be a city we want to be. I'm excited to be the culture and livability commissioner and deliver real results.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. And last but certainly not least, Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Colleagues, as many of you know, I am conflicted about this resolution. And here's why. This resolution before us today does two things. One of the things that it does, I support. And one of those things, in my estimation, engages in a bad practice. The first thing that this resolution does is to direct the city's chief administrative officer to develop a plan for implementing charter reform. I support that directive. Setting up a coherent, coordinated plan for implementing charter reform both fulfills the will of the voters and is an example of good strategic planning. Now, this resolution also does a second thing, which I am skeptical of. It sets up a 90-day city council action plan. Now, don't get me wrong, I support most of the individual proposals contained within this 90-day action plan. However, I am skeptical of the claim that this 90-day action plan meaningfully contributes to implementing charter reform. In fact, this 90-day action plan may represent a step away from best practices. In order to appreciate the problem here, I encourage council to think about the difference between strategy and tactics. Now, you can think of strategy as being the roadmap that defines where you want to go. On the other hand, tactics are the specific steps we take to get to our destination. Now, when we apply the concepts of strategy and tactics to the challenges of implementing charter reform, our situation looks something like this. Today, we adopt a resolution which charges the chief administrative officer with developing a strategic plan for implementing charter reform. This resolution also directs council to develop a 90-day action plan. Those action plans describe the steps we will take to reach our strategic goals. The problem with what we are doing today is this. We are defining and embarking on action plans before we have developed our strategic plan. In other words, with the 90-day action plan, we have given ourselves marching orders before we have decided where we want to go. Put bluntly, this 90-day action plan is an example of the ready, fire, aim school of public policy development. Still, here we are at the part of the program where I have the now awkward task of presenting my part of the 90-day action plan. Although I am skeptical of the process that got us to this moment, I stand by and am proud of the work my team has done to develop a strategic vision for public works here in the city of Portland. Now, as all of you know, I'm the commissioner in charge of the Water Bureau, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and PBOT. In other words, I am your commissioner of public works, and I am committed to building a better public works system here in Portland. In order to accomplish that strategic goal, I have directed my bureaus to work on the following tasks over the next 90 days. For example, I've directed my bureaus to strengthen their asset management systems. In addition, I've directed my bureaus to work with our city, intergovernmental, and private partners to keep Portland's streets and sidewalks clean and safe. Further, I've directed my bureaus to streamline, simplify, and coordinate the public permitting processes in our public works bureaus. Furthermore, I've directed my bureaus to take steps to open up the public works procurement processes to businesses owned by women, minorities, and other disadvantaged groups. And within the next 90 days, I will challenge my bureaus and this city to reduce traffic deaths by 10% by the end of this year. And finally, I will work with my colleagues on this council and in the state legislature and in the federal government to bring fiscal stability to PBOT, a bureau which will see its budget shrink by more than $100 million in the next fiscal year. Now, there's much more that I look forward to accomplishing in the next 90 days, but for the moment, I will turn the floor back to the mayor.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mapps. Thank you, colleagues. At this point, unless anybody has any burning questions, we'll move to public testimony before we have a discussion. Is that okay with everybody? Good. How many folks do we have signed up?
We have 13 people.
13 people. Let's do 3 minutes, please. Name for the record.
Thank you. First up, we have Bob Salinger.
Welcome, Bob. Thanks, Haley.
Yeah, of course.
Sorry.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, members of City Council. It's a pleasure to be back in this building. It's the first time I've been here since before COVID. My name is Bob Salinger, and as of 9 o'clock this morning, I am the Urban Conservation Director for Willamette Riverkeeper. Yesterday was my last day at Audubon.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yesterday's my last day at Audubon. Today's my first day at Riverkeeper, so we're hitting the ground running. I also want to acknowledge Micah Meskel in the back of the room there, who is now serving as Audubon's interim urban conservation director as well. So thanks to Micah for doing that. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Willamette Riverkeeper. I know that this is a huge process with many, many moving parts. I wanna focus in on one small piece of it, and that is the watershed functions and the natural resource programs that have historically been housed at BES. This is a program that has been critically important in terms of establishing Portland as a green leader, both nationally and internationally. And I've had the opportunity over 30 years at Audubon to watch that program grow and evolve and be part of it. And it's been an amazing success story. We've historically had one of the most effective green programs of any city in North America. We've also been concerned in recent years because that seems to be eroding. The watershed program has been dismantled, spread throughout BES, and we're just not seeing the kind of focus, innovation, attention, and implementation that we've seen historically. It feels like we kind of crested several years ago and we're kind of on the downside right now. In fact, it's really hard to even find those programs anymore. So it was once, I think, a real point of pride for Portland has become a challenge. My hope is that this innovation process will allow us to regain that green edge, because it's so important, not just for the health of our communities and the environment, but also for our economy as well. I've always believed that if we're going to build whole communities, they have to have affordable housing, sustainable transportation, good jobs, racial equity, and a healthy environment. They all have to be part of the picture. And if we don't have one of them, the rest of them will fail as well. We do have some trepidation about this process as well, as I'm sure you do. It's a big adventure for sure. But there's a couple of things we wanted to put in front of you today to think about. One is that there needs to be a big green vision. This can't just be about moving assets from one bureau to another. I think the focus so far has been really on taking trees and natural areas out of BES and putting them at parks. That may well make sense, but if we do that, all we're doing is reshuffling the cards. That doesn't fix things, doesn't get us back on the incline. So we need a big vision. Why are we doing it? Where do we want to get to? How do we best position things? We need to think about the big picture of what BES does. It's not just about those green assets. It's about the science. It's about the innovation. It's about the research. BES has been the city's green brain. It's been about meeting the regulatory requirements and exceeding them. Historically, we've tried to exceed them, not just meet them. And BES has led that cutting edge. So just moving the assets doesn't get us back there. We need to think beyond streamlining. Too often streamlining, and I'll end in 1 second, too often streamlining is simply, when it comes to the environment, about cutting the public out of the process and getting rid of regulations. Streamlining can be a good thing, but in the case of the environment, my experience has been that it hasn't been. It's usually taken us backwards. So I think we need to think about that as well. So with that, we look forward to working with you as this moves forward and making sure that we really do get to that big green vision and get back on the right track. Thank you.
Next up, we have Debbie Kay.
Welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I am Debbie Kay, president of the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League of Women Voters of Portland supported Measure 28228 with full confidence that the City Council could faithfully implement the charter reforms adopted by Portland voters, as well as continue conducting the important business of the city. This is illustrated by the resolution before you today, and we urge your support. We acknowledge that this is a big lift for each commissioner and perhaps especially for the mayor. However, we want to convey our trust in your leadership capacity. It is prudent to delegate Measure 28228 implementation to the Chief Administrative Officer and his transition team. The City Council, though, will have key votes related to implementation. To summarize, the League of Women Voters of Portland urges an all-hands-on-deck commitment to charter reform, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Debbie, you're very brief today. Thank you.
I thought that would be pleasing.
Yeah, thank you for being here as always.
Next up, we have Melanie Billings-Young.
Welcome, Melanie.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor, and members of the City Council, and Mr. Jordan, for this thoughtful and exciting plan. I am Melanie Billings-Yun, former co-chair of the Portland Charter Commission. 2 weeks ago, I shared with you my concerns regarding the delay in opening applications for the Government Transition Advisory Committee and the overall lack of transparency in implementing Measure 26228, restructuring our city's election system and form of government. Today, I've come before you to support Resolution 107, establishing a roadmap for the next 2 years, starting with the 90-day action plan to improve transparency. Equally, I applaud the united pledge made by City Council last week to quickly, thoughtfully, and strategically deliver Portland's shift to ranked choice voting, an expanded and district-based City Council, and a mayor-city administrator form of bureau management, all by January 2025. Having heard firsthand the many questions and concerns of people across our city about the implementation of the Charter Amendment, I am particularly grateful for your statement in support of the Transition Team's Community Engagement Plan, including sharing information on project schedule, resources, budgeting, and voter education. This is an important step in delivering the outcome voters demanded and in restoring public trust in our institutions. Thank you for your commitment to this collective effort.
Thank you, Melanie.
Next up, we have Leslie Hammond.
Hi, Leslie.
Good afternoon. My name is Leslie Hammond, as you've discovered. I'm a member of the Southwest Neighborhoods and a former chair for 4.5 years of the Sweeney Coalition. As most of you know, the coalitions deliver services to the neighborhoods. Today, I really must applaud and celebrate your ambitious plan to ensure the transformation and efficient structure to meet the Charter's challenges. Thank you for taking this on. I think you get superhero status. We in Southwest, championing Commissioner Ryan in particular, to reset a positive tone for neighborhoods and coalitions. Almost everyone identifies with a neighborhood, and when you meet somebody new, they always ask you where you're from. We are here to work with you and to turn Portland back into that jewel that it has been, and we believe that it can be again. By supporting public engagement, financially and philosophically, you are empowering each of us in every single neighborhood across the city to help find ways to solve the city's challenges. And guess what? Our labor and effort is free. At this moment, Southwest Neighborhoods would like three things for you to consider. We think it's time for new leadership in the management of how civic life delivers its services to us and others. So we'd ask you to consider that. Number two, we'd encourage you to refund the independent coalition that is Sweeney, which is a legally viable and recognized coalition, and quite frankly, raised its own funds to provide services to everyone in the neighborhoods for the last three years on its own through corporate and single donations from individuals who live in the neighborhood. We ask the commissioner in charge to recognize us as an independent coalition. We're asking for a budget of $5,000 a month to pay our ordinary and necessary business expenses starting July, and the right to contract for that service through your budget process. Last, I'd like to suggest that the Portland Engagement Project be paused until the neighborhoods and coalitions across the city can help put together a better design and purpose for it. We heard the first presentation or one of the first presentations last week, and it lacked coherence, goal, purpose, and clear design. So we'd like to help you with that. And then if you want to know what your neighbors think about what the city's doing, we open our doors and our homes and our time to you to ask how to do that. Once again, thank you. And we want you to know it's nice to have the city's winds at our back instead of the headwinds that neighborhoods and coalitions have experienced in the last several years. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Leslie, and thanks for all your leadership. We appreciate it.
Next up, we have Claire Coleman Evans.
Hi, Claire.
Hi, my name is Claire Coleman Evans, and I live in the Bridalmall Neighborhood Association. I'm a board member of the Bridalmall Neighborhood Association. However, today I'm speaking for myself. Thank you to the city commissioners and Michael Jordan for all your hard work on getting the city ready for this new transition. I'm encouraged to hear that Commissioner Ryan believes that neighborhood associations are an important part of this process moving forward. And I read the resolution, and he said the Office of Community and Civic Life and the Office of Equity and Human Rights will evaluate the city's neighborhood associations through an equitable lens with metrics and produce a report identifying high impact and collaboration between bureaus, the city and Portland neighborhoods. What is missing is the district coalitions for the different geographical neighborhoods. At this time, Southwest doesn't have a recognized district coalition by the city, and it's critical for everyone involved that this process be equitable. The relationship with district coalitions and the city is critical so that district coalitions can be the neighborhood advocates. The current structure under 3.96 and ONI standards are the blueprint for which community engagement and having Southwest neighborhoods under the city is not equitable and impossible for two staff at the city to do the work that the volunteers for the staff did, the volunteers of the staff at the city, Sweeney did. The relationship with the neighborhood associations needs a positive reset with the city and is an important part of the fabric of our city. The neighborhood associations and district coalitions sit at the center of the community safety, economic recovery, and civic engagement, and need to be invested in, and I'm so happy to hear that it is going to be. As we rebuild the city relationship with neighborhood associations, we need to do so with an equitable lens. Therefore, I would like to request that Sweeney be reinstated and recognized as a district coalition so that it's equitable going forward. We need this positive reset, and we need to return to 3.96 and ONI standards is critical. We have volunteers who have years of expertise and experience who are more than willing to work with the city going forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate your being here.
Next up, we have Richard Freimark.
Hi, Richard.
Good afternoon. As stated, I am Richard Freimark. I am the chairman of the Bridle Mile Neighborhood Association. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of myself, and I'm pleased to present my testimony today, Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2023, before City Council. Thank you, Mayor, and honorable members of City Council. Today, City Council sits at the precipice of what will decide Portland's future. Whether you agree or disagree, the voters decided we need to move forward with the new city charter. However, the charter does not mean throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Not everything in Portland is broken. We have thousands of city workers working every day to improve the lives of Portland businesses, families, children, and individuals. Since the mid-70s, Portland has been the shining star throughout the United States with their unique neighborhood and association and neighborhood coalition system. This system gives the people of Portland a much broader path for access and a clear and direct voice to our city council members. City Council will look different in 2 years as the city continues to move forward and the current City Council works out the new and required charter changes to keep all the people's lifelines in place. The charter change is no small task, and soon you will discover that there will probably be over 100 number one priorities that will need your attention. I urge you to keep in place the updated ONI standards titled 3.96 as you move forward in uncharted waters. For 2 years, over 20% of Portlanders have had their association and coalition's voice silenced as their neighborhood coalition was replaced by two overworked city employees at the Office of Civic Life. Our neighborhood association has been cut off from the benefits of a 501c3 at the cost of our neighborhood of more than $800 out of pocket for poor quality training and support. Westside associations have become bookkeepers rather than the ears and voices of our neighborhoods. After 2 years of being disenfranchised from the coalition, 17 Southwest neighborhood associations have been the victims of a failed idea. There's no way that two individuals, regardless of how dedicated, could replace the 8 coalition staffers and over 600 volunteers we've had for 45 years. Our mayor has asked for a 90-day action plan and the clock is ticking. Our neighborhood wants to be part of this historic reorganization. 20% of Portland's residents should not have been cut out of the action plan discussion. I urge you to reconsider funding Portland's Southwest Neighborhood Coalition as spelled out in 3.96 of ONI standards. Southwest Portland needs our independence restored by City Council at this critical time of our community's future. We humbly request that we end the 2-year failed experiment and restore our neighborhood coalition so we can better participate in the 90-day action plan. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Marita Inglesby.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, City Council members. I want to thank you for this robust and thoughtful resolution. I was quite excited. I think Mayor Wheeler is correct. It's fantastic. Seeing a 90-day plan is absolutely essential to getting all of the work done that you need to be doing as we build a new city government and keep the current one running. The themes of transparency and collaboration across bureaus and with the community will be essential. I want to recognize the Chief Administrative Officer. He certainly has his work cut out for him, as well as the Bureau staff who will be responsible for carrying out the plan. Well done. I would like the plan to recognize the role that city employees will have in the transition work and to support them through the next 2 years with effective change management. I think I heard Michael Jordan say that change management would start sometime in the future. I think it needs to start now. I think every single employee needs to be supported through this huge amount of work. I would also like to see the reporting of ongoing progress be provided to the community as well as to City Council on this plan. There are two elements of the 90-day plan I would like to call out, which have already been testified to. First, in Commissioner Ryan's section, item C2C, with further details in Exhibit B, item 2, recognizing the value of neighborhood associations and the need for a positive reset. I'm with Hayhurst Neighborhood Association, not speaking on their behalf, but just as a resident. But I can see how effective neighborhood associations are and the district coalitions, including Southwest Neighborhood. They will have an integral role to play in the transition to an ongoing operation of geographic districts. Neighborhoods have just got to feed into this new geographic structure that we're going to be implementing. Also in Commissioner Ryan's section, item C4, as Bob Salinger said, we need to regain the green edge. I love that. I hope he doesn't mind me quoting him. But planning to continue the integration of services related to nature, green infrastructure, watershed management, natural areas, tree canopy. We just can't let that slide. That is so important for the city, particularly with climate change. So I want to thank you all for what you're doing during this transition period. You have maybe the most important work ever tackled by a Portland City Council. I'm hopeful that with it, we build back the respect and trust that is essential to a livable Portland. Thank you.
Thanks, Marita. And I know Michael Jordan appreciated your shout out and your condolences. Thank you for that.
Next up, we have Jimmy Wilson.
Jimmy, welcome.
Jimmy Wilson.
All right, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the privilege to sit down before you all. And you know, I don't have a script. I have a heart. I'm coming to y'all straight from the heart. We have Mayor Wheeler, we have you as the administrator. We got Commissioner Gonzalez. We got you as public safety. We got Rubio. We got you, Commissioner Rubio, as these community economic and development. We got Matt, you got our perfect works. And we got you, Darren Whalen, at culture and livability. What I'm gonna say from my heart is, I need y'all, we all voted for you all to put in the seat you are in. What I'm asking you to look at your guys' heart from inward out, not outward in, because we really need leadership that's gonna move what the people wants, what the people was asking for. We are commanding y'all to do the job that's necessary to move this city forward. And I believe y'all can do that. But you got to have the right people in place. And a lot of people that I see is getting left behind that got great decisions that can make this work. The coalitions are very important, Dan, right, to your work. You need the coalition because they are the inside institutions that will make this happen. Because you got me, you know? I mean, I'm here to serve. Yes, I represent Northeast Coalition. I'm on the board of the LA Neighborhood Association. I'm on the board of trustees of Emmanuel Church. I'm on a lot of boards, but besides that, moving the rock forward is necessary in these last days, okay? And I know 107 got a lot. It's a lot, you know. I can't talk about all that, but I can say this. You need to get out of your seats and into the streets and see what's really going on. Get out of your seat. We need to see you. We need you to see us and see what we are doing. Because guess what? Delegation is one thing, but touching people and building relationships is where it's at. So you gotta get out of that motto of, I'm gonna make this happen. Sound good, but we never see your face. We never see your face. Thank you.
Hey, Jimmy, if I could just say, number one, I appreciate that because most people say they see too much of my face. So thank you for that. But number two, I actually think one of the positive outcomes of going to a district form of government, having more representatives, is you probably will see your city commissioners in the community more than now. There's no question that a big part of our work week is actually taken up by managing the enterprise, because we are, in fact, commissioners in charge of bureaus. So we're also managers of an organization. Your point is well taken. I get exactly what your point is. You want us to hear and see what's going on at the street level, in the community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and I agree wholeheartedly. I just want to put a word of encouragement that I actually think you're going to see that improve as we move to the new form of government. That's part of what we're trying to do.
I only have 3 minutes. Do I get a
chance
rebuttal to that?
Yes.
Mayor, I appreciate that, what you said, but Mayor, you have been to our church when we voted you in, and that's all we think. You know, Northeast Coalition is the first coalition that existed in Portland. That's the Northeast side, okay? That's dealing with people who look like me, okay? Mm-hmm. When we have situations and you ask us for results or information, you come at a time to us when you need. Come at a time when we want to build a relationship with us. Come around us. Let us see you.
I think you're about to extend an invitation. Am I hearing that correctly? Because I would love to go.
I'm talking to the heart, inward out, not outward in. You know? So when you come right now, we don't have no public restroom in King School Park. Take your kid there and watch him have to go. What you gonna do when he can't go nowhere? That's bad, and it's a park. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Extend an invitation. I'd look forward to it, sir. Thank you. Next individual.
Next up, we have Marcy McFarland.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, loud and clear, okay. You sound good.
My name is Marcy McFarland. I'm a North Portland resident. I represent the North Portland Tool Library. We used to be underneath North Portland Neighborhood Services, which is now going down. My interactions with the Office of Community and Civic Life have been, let's just say, problematic. In 2020, when the people laid off my tool library coordinator, which was not a position under the city, I was not told. My tool coordinator called me and told me, when I called OCCL, I was told they don't deal with volunteers. Personally, I thought that was what your entire job was with Office of Community and Civic Life, was working with volunteers. I am a volunteer. I also was on the Overlook Neighborhood Association board. I am with the Kenton Firehouse. And I just want to see transparency. When our directors and officers insurance went belly up, I got the runaround. I sent emails to everybody, including you, Mayor Wheeler, and I got no responses. I got nothing for an entire month. I called the office. Michael Montoya and Shook gave me the runaround. It was incredibly frustrating, and I have lost any belief that Office of Community and Civic Life really wants to help the community or the civic life. I'm really hoping that this reset is going to provide some transparency, some support, and some just needed advice. I'm a volunteer. I do what I can. My parents told me that I needed to volunteer, and I have been doing that my entire life. My parents volunteered for everything that they could in the city of Portland, including our schools. But if I can't find support from Office of Community Civic Life, I find it very frustrating that you want to help us. The North Portland Tool Library provides tools for people for free. We help people who are repairing their house, who have to trim their hedges. We are sustainable. We continue to help people that are going to be thrown out of their house because their grass is too long, their roof is broken. We repair tools. We don't throw them away. So we are kind of all of the Bureau's best appointments. You want us there. I just need to see support and transparency from the Office of Community and Civic Life to support the North Portland neighborhoods with 11 neighborhood associations and 19 nonprofits. We support ourselves, and we really need the support from the city. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Marcy. Could I just ask a follow-up question? And I'm familiar with your tool library, and I think it's fantastic, and I really appreciate it. Is the support you're asking, well, first of all, I apologize if we did not respond to an email. I can't explain that. We respond to each and every email that we receive in the mayor's office. So I'm not sure if it just got forwarded or what happened to that. So I apologize in terms of no response there. Are you specifically asking the Office of Community and Civic Life for grant support? What are you asking for?
We are actually wanting to be our own entity in a certain way. There's, like I said, there's 11 neighborhood associations, 19 nonprofits. And in the past, Office of Community and Civic Life has just supported us by helping us through the process of applying for grants. Mary Jaron Kelly with the Kenton Firehouse has helped us just navigate everything through the city. As you know, I'm not that great with some stuff, but we're not looking for money. We're just looking for support and answers. You promised to pay for our directors and officers insurance, and it lapsed for almost 6 months, and I had to close down the tool library. I'm not a rich person, and I can't afford to have somebody who uses a drill accidentally drill something and then sue me. And you know, as a volunteer, I have to hire my own lawyers and make sure that I don't lose my house. This Office of Community and Civic Life has paid for our general liability and officers and directors insurance. And it was like pulling teeth to get Michael Montoya or Shook to even answer our questions. And they just kept giving me the runaround. They said that they've been looking at it since July. And in October, there was still no answer. We finally got a contract, but it doesn't even say what the contract is for. It's just a blank slate. So we're looking for officers and directors insurance. Overlook Neighborhood Association actually went and bought their own for $600 so that they can continue to operate because they lost 3 board members due to the lack of insurance.
All right, good. That's actually extremely helpful. And the commissioner in charge is hearing the specifics of your request. And I appreciate your bringing them here and clarifying them for all of us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
Next up, we have Diane Meisenhelter.
Hi. I must say I love the tool bank, and that transparency issue is one that we're well familiar with also. So I'm going to speak from the point of view of XR PDX. And in viewing resolution 107, we were pleased that the city was beginning the process of moving towards the implementation of the new structure of government with both code and organizational alignments attached to key performance measures and funding. However, at closer inspection, were concerned that climate justice was not within the top shared priorities and find that viewing the chosen priorities within the lens of good governance, equity, and climate sustainability was seemingly not followed throughout this plan. Given that the City Climate Work Plan did not anticipate reductions in emissions from industry until after 2030, which is truly unacceptable, it seems strange to prioritize an industry-led effort in this arena within your 90-day or priority plan while having the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability not speak to any other climate work plan items as priorities. Given the climate science demanding a rapid decline in greenhouse gas emissions by 2025 to ensure they are halved by 2050, the city needs to be prioritizing policy and, more importantly, budget and action for rapid emissions reductions in realms under your control. For example, your own buildings, fleets, and any number of tasks identified in the insufficient climate work plan. While PSEF, for some reason not mentioned here, is an important tool for resources and climate justice and for the funds to address climate justice, the city needs to be devoting its own budget resources and aligning across departments, similar to the director's table being proposed to address coordination around houselessness. Siloed functionality has been difficult for achieving adequate climate actions as well. Furthermore, public health and safety needs to be considered more broadly and should include, among other actions, rescinding the Zenith Lux, where community voices and substantive reports and evidence have been repeatedly ignored. In MAPS portfolio, while EV charging stations may be commendable, we need to be focusing on reducing vehicle miles traveled through numerous programs, incentives for use of more efficient and affordable public transit, better and safer bike and pedestrian incentive programs, microtransit, implementing the POLM recommendations, electrifying public transit, not expanding freeways except for seismic and mass transit, and so much more. It is truly disappointing to see our local leaders turn a blind eye to one of the most serious health and safety challenges facing us all and clearly not prioritizing climate equity and sustainability policy and substantive actions at the level that this crisis demands. If we are to really have a new government that coordinates and, okay, I'm done.
If you just had a couple more sentences, you can go ahead and finish up.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Thank you.
Next up, we have Steve Mullinex.
Hey, Steve.
Steve, you're muted.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and council members. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on this resolution, which in part addresses the relationship among neighborhood associations, district coalitions, and city bureaus. My name is Steve Mullinex. I'm president of Southwest Neighborhoods Incorporated, known as SWNI, a nonprofit which has served for over 40 years as the district coalition for Southwest Portland. Exhibit B for this resolution says, the relationship with the neighborhood associations needs a positive reset with the city, as they are an important part of the fabric of our city and need to be invested in. And thank you also, Commissioner Ryan, for reiterating that commitment. SWNI commends this recognition of the need for a positive reset. We look forward to a continued constructive working relationship with all city bureaus. Our standing committees for equity, land use, parks, public safety, schools, and transportation serve as public forums to engage the neighborhood associations and city agencies. We'll participate wholeheartedly with the city's focus on the key immediate drivers of houselessness, public safety, and financial recovery. The city should work toward recognition of independent district coalitions of all geographic areas. Since July of 2020, SWNI is funded entirely by donations and staffed by volunteers. SWNI and its standing committees have continued meeting and providing services to our associations. We provided, participated in siting a safe refuge village in Multnomah, among other projects. And we have a high quality newspaper that reaches about 2,000 subscribers monthly. Sweeney should be officially recognized for the work it has done for without city funding for the last 3 years, fully recognized as an independent district coalition and funded in the fiscal year 2023-24 budget. Sweeney supports an open search for a permanent director for the City Office of Community and Civic Life. And we also request that the Portland Engagement Project should be paused until the neighborhood associations and community-based groups can help weigh in on its design. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present testimony, and I also refer you to my written testimony.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Next up, we have Thomas Karwacki.
Hi, Thomas.
Good afternoon. My name is Thomas Karwacki. I am the chair of the University Park Neighborhood Association. On Monday, we had a meeting with Commissioner Ryan's staff in North Portland, Neighborhood Services, the chairs. And I will say right after that, we are fired up, ready to go. Are you, as commissioners, ready, fired up, ready to go? Okay. Key things are, number one, we're all in favor of a reset with the neighborhoods and the business districts and the nonprofits of the community. That's really important. That's clear. We're totally, as a board, totally in favor and will support you to the fullest extent for everything that's in this resolution so far. So that's really important. Step one. Step two, we have real concerns that any study actually involve the neighborhood associations and business districts. So we hope the HR, Office of Human Rights and Equity, and the civic life also includes the neighborhoods in this study that they're doing. And that's real important. And that's part of the other issues that we'd ask you as specifically for University Park Neighborhood Association. My backyard, just behind my backyard, is the Safe Rest Village, the Peninsula Crossing. The big things here are we ask for a real commitment, not just to start construction, but to actually finish and do at least major construction, most of the project ready to go. It's been 1 year since it's been announced, and there are a number of people who live behind my house who are unsheltered has doubled. And so this is a big concern of the neighborhood to please actually get the project done. And I understand that you can't control the vendor selection and all of that, but you can actually get some real construction done in 90 days, not just start construction because you've already started the construction. So that's really low bar. So that's what we're asking for. We're all in support of it. And we ask you to ask you, are you ready to go? Are you fired up and ready to go with this new form of government? Also,
thank you, Thomas.
Separately, yeah, I'd just that simply say, as far as the insurance, I'm also NPNS Inc., which is not a vendor, but will be probably next year for the insurance. And we have been for 20 years, 25 years. And the whole issue of civic life, there's been total mismanagement of all of this on the insurance. And yes, all of the nonprofit, all of our nonprofits and our neighborhood associations have yet to get insurance that has been promised. So our general liability comes up at the end of this month, and we'll see if we're actually covered. So that's it.
Appreciate it.
Next up, we have Lynn Handlin.
Hi, my name is Lynn Handlin. I'm part of the Midway Business Association, but I am not representing them here today. Also part of XRPDX. I was glad when I read the plan to see the 90-day plan concept and the and transparency, which we'd love to see more transparency since that's been sorely lacking of late. But anyway, I'm glad about that. I'm also hopeful about the new Public Works pilot project. That was exciting. I'm hoping that that's going to make sure there's no more failures like the Outer Southeast Division Street debacle with the promise of many trees in the median in one of the worst heat islands in the city, in one of the lowest income parts of the city. And it's the part most needing tree canopy. Trees were promised to the community. The project was completed with no trees, just even more hot concrete and asphalt than ever due to the apparent lack of coordination between PBOT and the Water Bureau. So I'm hoping y'all are fixing that. I'm excited about this possibility. That'd be great. And of course it's too late for Division Street, which is, you know, always kind of at the end of all the things, but maybe you can do something good for Outer Southeast Portland. And, you know, plant real trees in public areas, in street medians, not promised trees, because those don't really work. I do have great concern that this plan talks about, the 90-day plan talks about public safety in a few areas, but it doesn't mention the, one of the greatest public safety threats in the city, which is, of course, the CEI hub. It's especially in terms of seismic risk, but all sorts of other risks. And of course, the worst of the worst in the CEI hub is Zenith Energy, which also poses derailment risk. And there's like nothing in here in any of your plans about dealing with that in any way. It seems the city has given up on this. You're not willing to oppose powerful business interests to do what is clearly the right thing, which y'all acknowledged earlier that it was the right thing. Instead, you're just caving to the public interest, and that is sad. Instead, you talk about industrial symbiosis, which is a good concept, but it can easily lead to greenwashing and false solutions like renewable methane and renewable diesel if it's not led by environmental justice advocates. So I'm really hoping that when you do this symbiosis thing, that you're going to have it led by environmental justice advocates and not industry. The other thing you talked about is industry-led planning process to set and meet carbon reduction goals. I mean, industry-led? Seriously? What about community-led or climate activist-led or environmental justice advocate-led? Not industry, including people like, you know, Northwest Methane and Zenith Energy and other fossil fuel industries. Like why? This really doesn't make any sense. You're trusting industry, and on your climate work plan, you don't expect anything from industry until 2030. So it doesn't make climate and public health sense, but it does show, unfortunately, who you prioritize, which is industry. I'm hoping that's going to change with the changes that are coming. So I'm hopeful that y'all will fix that, all of this. And it would be nice if you would fix the Zena situation. We have not given up. I'm hoping you haven't. Thanks.
Thank you, Lynn. Appreciate your being here today.
That completes testimony.
All right, colleagues, thank you, everybody who testified. It was pretty obvious people prepared and planned and gave thoughtful testimony across the board. We appreciate that. Colleagues, any discussion on the resolution? We're discussed out. I just want to express again my thanks to my colleagues for their hard work on this. I do want to reiterate, because some people indicated, well, this is missing from the 90-day plan or that is missing from the 90-day plan. This is not the entirety of the work that we're going to do. It is a 90-day plan, so it is what we are bringing forth as priorities over the course of the next 3 months. But the work of the City Council continues. And a number of people had mentioned, for example, have we abandoned our climate action goals because there's not a lot of specifics around climate action in the 90-day plan? Well, just a week ago, Commissioner Rubio brought forth what I thought was some really exceptional work around accelerating our efforts to meet our climate action goals in working with the community, working with advocacy organizations, working with local experts. That's not mentioned in the 90-day plan either. That doesn't mean that the work around those things doesn't continue. It absolutely does. So I just want to keep the context here very narrow in terms of what we're trying to do in this particular instance with this resolution. This is forwarding the work of the transition from one form of government to another. That is what we are focused on here today. It is not intended as a comprehensive statement of all of our top priorities and all of the projects that we are working on. With that, then I will call the roll. I don't get to call the roll. I'm not qualified. Only the council clerk is qualified to do that. Keelan, if you'd so honor us, please call the roll.
Of course. Rubio.
Thank you. And I just want to say thank you, Mayor, for mentioning that about our fuller workload. We have a clear commitment to climate action that isn't just for 90 days. It's every day and every day up until the last day that we're here. So I want to appreciate you for mentioning that we have a much fuller work of the city that's continuing on as well. I want to start by thanking the mayor also for bringing this resolution together. I want to share how much my team and I appreciate how collaborative you and your office has been with us in helping to shape key parts of this resolution. And we really appreciate that collaboration. And also much appreciation to Director Jordan for the thoughtful discussions that helped with as well. I also want to thank the stellar Bureau leadership, and particularly the bureaus that I'm working with, Bureau of Development Services, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Prosper Portland, and Housing, and whom we've been working with over the course of our first month together. I can't say enough about their professionalism and dedication to our city. We have a lot of work ahead together, and I feel very honored to get to work with these folks over the next 2 years. And finally, I want to thank my own staff for their great work, and especially my chief of staff, Jillian Shoney, for her countless hours on this project. So I'm very excited and eager to vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes. First of all, thank you for the public testimony I heard today. And I want to start off by acknowledging my chief of staff, Kelly Torres. If you all don't know this, it's the chiefs of staffs from our offices that make sure that the collaboration is fluid and continues. And I know they were working hand in glove with also Mike Jordan and his team. So thank you for that work. I really appreciate the collaboration across all the bureaus and council offices. This process has been going on since November in some shape or form. So I really appreciate how it's evolved. I know what the council's proposing is going to be a heavy lift. And I know the path ahead will be hard, but for me, I just am excited to use my executive leadership experience coupled with my passion for arts and parks and neighborhoods. And it really does put fire in my belly to serve Portlanders and to partner with the agile leaders of all of our city's bureaus. I'm proud to establish systems and processes over the next 2 years that will actually attract a new city manager and give them an on-ramp to hit the ground running with our new form of government. It's an honor to be my second term on this city council during this time of radical common sense change. I'm delighted to be the new commissioner of culture and livability. And to quote you, sir, Mr. Jimmy Wilson, here's to being out of my seat and in the streets. I kind of paraphrased it. Did that work? Okay, got it. I got the aye. Anyway, onward. I vote aye.
Gonzalez.
Just want to thank you all for your interest in this topic. It's obviously a meaty resolution, doing a lot. Just highlight a couple of pieces. We are delivering a technical requirement mandated by the voters in November. It's a key component of this. Let's not lose sight of that we all have a job to do, and that's to deliver charter reform as voted on by the voters. Second, there is a substantial amount of rethinking of government embedded in these resolutions, and that goes beyond the technical requirements of charter reform. I think it is simultaneously exciting and a daunting task to rethink government while you're governing and implementing a complex legal structure. So I would encourage us to all be humble as we pursue that. Nonetheless, I, in my short time here since January, am seeing synergies and am seeing connections that were not self-evident without the clustering of bureaus in the way they've been done. So I'm excited by that. And frankly, it's an honor to be your public safety commissioner. I take the responsibility very seriously at a really tough time for the city. Last but not least, I had my own trepidation, as did Commissioner Mapps, about the inclusion of 90-day deliverables in these type of resolutions. But what I did hear from the public is they want to see tangible outcomes. They want to be updated regularly on how we're proceeding, not just on charter reform, not just on how we're reimagining government, but also addressing the core issues of the city. And, you know, very much crime and homelessness are at the forefront. So we've used this as an opportunity to really focus in on those items that citizens have told us repeatedly they're very, very concerned about. So we'll use this as an opportunity. And I do want to thank my colleagues up here. This there were aspects of this that weren't easy. Again, we have a technical deliverable based on what the voters approved. We're rethinking government, and we're trying to collaborate on what priorities should be across, you know, 25 plus bureaus. This wasn't easy work in many respects. With that, I vote aye.
Maps.
I appreciate the public testimony we heard today, and I want to recognize my city council staff and my staff at BES, PBOT, and Water for their work on this resolution. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I will also want to thank again Michael for your leadership and the rest of the Charter Transition team for your work on this very important process. And I see a number of our bureau directors here today, and I want to thank them for their continued hard work. I also want to thank my fellow commissioners and their council office staff and bureau leadership for working together for our three priorities: to prepare the city for better governance, to improve our system of bureau management oversight, and to remain focused on addressing Portland's toughest problems. I thank you all for your support of this. I join you in voting aye and supporting the resolution. This resolution is adopted, and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.